quarantine, pandemic, vaccines, polio, family. This is a special episode of Prosperity and Something Greater. This is the third installment of a three-part mini-season of this podcast. The first episode was about Napoleon Hill, who has impacted my life so positively, just as he has millions of others. And in the second episode, I share the story of how I created, and then I read my new book, Your Inner Six-Year-Old, Change Your Life Forever. That book was beautifully illustrated by my daughter Annie and shares a simple idea that we can all use to simply be more loving and supportive to ourselves. This third and final installment of the mini-series has had some twists and turns. It all started in mid-March when the COVID-19 epidemic was obviously going to impact the United States, and San Francisco became the first major U.S. city to shut down. I was researching pandemics, quarantines, and at the time, this is mid-March, there was really no reference to COVID-19 at all. And that has certainly changed now. But interestingly, what primarily came up then were references to polio. And polio has plagued humans for thousands of years. The great polio epidemic in the United States occurred from 1916 to 1955. Think about that. 1916 to 1955. Polio is a viral disease that affects the nervous system, causing paralysis. It spreads through direct contact with people who have the infection. Something I want you to remember for later in this podcast. Now, outbreaks occurred regularly in the United States through the 1950s with two major polio outbreaks in 1916 and in 1952. Of the 57,628 reported cases in 1952, there were 3,145 deaths. Then, in 1955, Dr. Jonas Salk's vaccine was approved. It was quickly adopted throughout the world, and by 1962, the average number of cases had dropped to 910. The CDC trusted source reports that the United States has been polio-free since 1979. Europe has been since 2002, but it still persists in small numbers today. You will hear me say later that the vaccine was released to the world in 1952, but it's actually 1955. 1952 is the year of a major polio outbreak, actually the final major polio outbreak, but not the vaccine. That was 55. In 1941, my dad contracted polio. He was 7. His younger brother, my Uncle Dick, was only 5. So my dad and my uncle, they have one more brother, my Uncle Ray, but at the time my dad was stricken, Ray hadn't yet been born. So I managed to speak to my dad and to my Uncle Dick about their memories of that time and their insights. And the conversation took some turns, as you'll see, as these sons remembered their parents, and in particular, their father. My grandfather, as you will soon discover, was someone very, very special. Now, at the start of our talk, my dad accused me of having an ulterior motive for this interview.
First of all, Dad, thanks so much for doing this with me. I've been looking forward to this quite a bit.
I shouldn't say this to you, but I had a thought, because my mind is always going like everybody else's, and I thought, maybe he thinks I'm getting ready to check out, so he wants to get all the answers to the questions he has before I go. You know, that's not a bad idea anyway.
That wasn't my plan, but I will ask you the question Barry always asks you, which is, where did you stash all the money?
Well, to be honest with you, I spent it all.
Then we really did turn our discussion to his memories of contracting polio.
Let me ask you a question. What is the earliest memory you have at all in your childhood? What's your earliest memory?
I know I remember, now I was 7 years old when this happened, but that's when I had polio, and I was upstairs in the bedroom because I was in bed for a while, and we were all quarantined. And I remember someone, and it had to be my brother Dick, I think, because he was there helping me all the time. And he always, and throughout his entire life, he's been the same way with me. And I've told him a couple of times how much I appreciate all of that. Those are the kind of things you should say to people while they're still here. But I was about seven, and I think it was him, and he told me that the Japanese had bombed Pearl Harbor. And I didn't understand, I didn't know what that meant, because I didn't have any information like that.
So let me ask you, Dad, so when do you think was the first time that you heard the word or were aware of polio?
Well, I wasn't aware of anything like that at some point. And like I said, I was about 7 years old. At some point, I got sick. And I don't remember much about that. Some things. But I just have vague memories about I got sick and I didn't know anything about it or how serious it was or anything. But we were quarantined. In other words, we couldn't go out. I don't know how we got food in, and I'm sure that there was help doing that. But they didn't know. You know, what we're going through now with COVID was sort of like what we were going through back then. Nobody knew anything about this polio. The thing I remember was there was a woman called Sister Kenny. I'm not sure whether she, what her training, she was in the medicine field doing something, but what she was recommending people do was to, if you had a leg or an arm or some kind of a paralysis or problem, is to wrap those, put wraps into scalding hot water and then, you know, squeeze out the excess and wrap the limbs up like that. And you know, that's about what they knew. And whether or not that did any good, I don't know. I don't remember having any pain. But I do remember one thing, and I've always remembered that. And maybe what I'm experiencing now is a little bit similar. But I think the polio virus affected your, one thing it affected was your nerves. And I can remember when I had it that there were times I couldn't keep my legs still, or it felt like I couldn't keep it still. And it was probably when it was attacking the nerve in my leg or the nerves. But I don't remember any terrible agony, pain, or anything like that. But then also, maybe it was Sister Kenny said you should have a... Oh, there was a doctor, I don't remember his name even, but he came to the Phillipsburg Hospital once a month, maybe more, I don't know that. But at least once a month, we would go out and he would see me. And anybody else that had problems like that, and to check the progress and to see maybe if they've discovered any, you know, to help me. And there wasn't much they could do to help me. Somebody came up with the idea to keep the limbs, like your legs, from becoming distorted, to build a metal frame that would fit, your leg would fit in this frame, and it would hold your legs straight so that it didn't get all messed up. And I don't know how much I used that. Also, and I think it might have been Sister Kenny, was recommending to make a metal box, not so much a box, like a Quonset hut. It would, your leg could go into this thing, and in it, it would be a lot of light bulbs. It would just be wired for total totally fill up with light bulbs that would create a lot of heat and put your leg into that. That might help with it. And I remember Dad had one of those made. And I think there used to be an electric company just as you cross the creek down there to go into Phillipsburg. I forget the name of it, but he had that built. And then they fitted me with a brace, a metal brace. And I remember what I remember most about that was most of the time it was broken getting repair because it didn't seem to hold up so well. And I don't know how long I wore that. I don't think it was a long time. It might have been. I don't know. But then there were years when I never wore a brace when I went to high school. I don't think I had one in elementary school. At some point, I was as an adult, I read about this guy in this family that had a shoe store in Bellefonte. And I think it was a third or fourth generation people running it. And this one guy helped a lot of people. He had special shoes made for people with leg problems. And he was selling a brace and advertising it that wasn't made to fit, but they could fit you with that. And so I went over there one time, and I don't know what it costs even, but I tried when he would put one on you and tell you, go out and walk in the street for a while and see how it feels. See if it helps you walk better. And I did that, and I bought a brace like that, and I had it, I don't know, a couple of years or something. And I saw that there was a doctor down in Johnstown was going to hold some kind of a clinic. People were coming up with post-polio syndrome. They didn't know what that was. But some people thought that it was like the polio virus becoming activated again. I think what it is, people were with leg problems and walking problems were having more difficulty, but they were getting older and their leg was losing strength. And that's what I always attributed. But I thought, I'll go see. Join this, and I went down there for I don't know how long, a few years, to see the doctor down there that was conducting this, and I don't know what the results were ever with me, whether I had any problems or not, but because I just don't remember. But I did go down to see him periodically, and then he told me that he saw the brace I had bought in Bellefonte. And he said, you know, if you had a brace made to fit your leg, you would be able to walk better than you're walking. So I did. I found a guy over somewhere in the Altoona area. He was from Johnstown also. And I went over there and he built the brace that I'm wearing today.
Now, the polio affected your left leg, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And what size shoe do you wear on your left leg, and what size shoe do you wear on your right leg?
I wear, I don't know right now, but it's about a 12 and a half on my right leg, and it's about a 9.5 on my left leg.
Okay. Those are a little bigger than I had remembered. All right. So you made a comment to me once, recently, actually, about your left leg, which for much of my life, you always referred to as your bad leg and told me you don't do that anymore, right?
No, I don't, because I've learned some things that I truly believe, and I don't want to do that, and I don't do that.
Well, why?
Why? Well, I've read some books, and there's some thought in some areas. I don't want to get off on this tangent because this is a whole different ball game, but anyways, there's some thought that you need to be careful when you're talking about your body, and you don't want to be saying bad things about it because some people think that there's more going on with our bodies than we realize. And so I think we need to be careful what we're saying. For example, if I keep saying my bad leg, that's not helping my leg get better. It's not helping my leg improve. I need to be saying good things about my leg. Now, maybe I'm out in left field. This has been growing in me for quite a while, and it isn't a recent thing. And so I don't call it my bad leg now. It's a
what
very
do you call
good
it?
Leg. It's a good leg. It's very good. And I thank it because I've been walking on it. What am I? I'm going to be for 86, for 79 years I've been walking on that leg. Can't be too bad. It can't be a bad leg to have carried me that far.
Yeah,
see what I'm saying?
I sure do. I think the last time we discussed this, you said it's a heroic leg for what it's done for you for 79 years.
I believe it. Yeah, I mean, I ran, I played football, I wrestled, and it never left me down. That's another thing. My poor dad, my grandmother, when she heard Grandma Jackson, my dad's mother, when she heard that I was playing football, my dad told me one time that she talked to him and said that she thought it was terrible that he was making me play football. And he said, "Mother, I'm not making him do anything. It's what he wants to do." And when I talked to them about playing football, the doctor that came into the Phillipsburg Hospital every month, they asked him about it. And would it be okay? And he said, if he wants to play football, let him play football. If he hurts or injures that leg, it will heal like the other leg. And so there was never any question about whether I could wrestle or play football or do anything else. Whatever.
And you wrestled heavyweight, right? You wrestled heavyweight and did really well. And you were, what were you, a defensive tackle on the football team?
I played nose tackle. In other words, I couldn't run very fast, so I wasn't going to catch somebody out in the flat running because it wasn't going to happen. But I had an area, like playing over the center and between the two guards on defense, that I had to stop anybody from coming through there. Well, because when I was in seventh grade, I asked my dad to buy me a set of weights so I could start building up my strength and so forth. And he did. And back then, as I look back and have thought about it, it probably took him about 2 weeks of his income to buy the weights. The weights weren't a big deal. They were just then starting to do bodybuilding on Muscle Beach in California. And people would come down to watch these crazy people lifting weights. When I wrestled, my wrestling coach and a lot of other coaches didn't want you to lift weights because they thought that if you lifted weights, you were going to become muscle bound and you wouldn't have the flexibility and so forth that you have otherwise. But over the years, that changed because they found out that if you do it properly, you don't become muscle bound. You become damn strong and more flexible and everything else. That's why they spend so much money, professional teams, universities, and lots of individuals.
I mean, that's just a great story. Okay, so let's go back now. So you got sick. Do you know, and you were 7 years old, and this was 1942, right, that this happened?
1941.
41.
That's when Japan bombed Pearl Harbor.
Really?
December the 7th, 1941, yeah.
So you were already quarantined and in your room during that time.
Yeah, right.
Was there any worry about Dick? Now, Ray was what, a baby at the time? Or Ray was
no,
a baby,
Ray,
right?
Ray was 7 years younger than me.
Oh, so he maybe wasn't born yet.
He wasn't born.
Okay.
No.
Was there any worry about Dick catching polio from you?
I don't know. I don't know. But I know he was always there.
Yeah. That's interesting. So how long? Do you have any memory of that quarantine, you know?
No, I don't know how long that lasted, because I obviously when I got sick in quarantine, I had to leave second grade. So the following year, I went back to school and I started back in second grade. So the people that I was with in first grade, I lost a year. So most of my friends were like a year ahead of me.
Now, did Dick lose a year too?
No. I don't know how long they kept us quarantined. No, Dick didn't lose any. Mm-mm.
Okay. And your dad, he couldn't work for a little while, right?
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting, isn't it? Do you remember where he was working at the time?
Oh, yeah. My dad, from my first memories, worked at Morning Star Bakery on Front Street in Phillipsburg. Remember that?
Sure.
Okay. That's where he worked. And he worked in the mixing department, where they put the flour and everything into big mixing bowls and mixed it to make bread and so forth. And
he was at the bakery at that time.
Yeah, he was at the bakery. And then he got drafted into the World War II, I think in 1943. And when he came back from the service, he didn't want to go back into the mixing room because there was a lot of dust in there. So he started driving a bread truck for the bakery, and he was out in the country, outside of Phillipsburg and Clearfield. I don't know what you'd call that area, but he did that, and when he was in the service, they got it from the mosquitoes over in the south.
Malaria. Yeah, he got malaria.
Yeah. So he came back, and he was working in the bakery. He got malaria. Periodically, he would get run down, and his malaria would flare up. What I don't remember is when they started the store, but I know he was homesick trying to recover. Maybe they had already started the store then, because the bakery called him a few times wanting to know when he's coming back, because they needed him, or they needed to hire somebody else. My mother told him he's never coming back. But by then, I think he would have had the store running. And then he decided, well, when they put the store in, they put in an oil furnace, because we didn't have a coal furnace or anything. And they didn't want to be spending a lot of time maintaining a furnace fire with coal and wood, because they wanted to be in the store taking care of customers. So they put in an oil furnace, and then he decided he was going to go to school with Carrier Corporation in Rochester, New York, and learn to install and service oil furnaces, which he did. He went up there and went to school. And so now he's got two businesses going, and that's what it was. He was trying to do the oil furnace stuff and also run the store. And, of course, my mother was right there all the time with him. But his health would, because he was working so much, he always worked a lot. He would get sick with malaria. And finally the doctor told him one time, he said, look, you have to make a choice. Either you're going to be in the store business or the furnace business, but you can't do them both. And you're going to wind up with serious problems if you continue like this. So he discontinued the furnace business and focused totally on the store business.
I remember that. And he was so handy, so good with everything. Then those genes did not pass down to you or to me. They certainly did to Dick. But
Dick never wanted to go to college, but he is sure well trained. But that was what he wanted to do. He used to take any clocks we had or anything small, mechanical part. I don't think he ever put much back together, but I would hear mother saying something about it. He takes it up. But when I was young, I used to think my dad because of things he did, that he was a genius. Honest to God, because he accomplished so much. And one time, he had a car, but he also had an old red International pickup truck. And one day, and it was older, and one day he said, I think I'm going to overhaul that. And I thought, he's not a mechanic. What's he mean? He thinks he's going to overhaul it. And he did, but he used his head. He knew he wasn't a mechanic, but there was one of his customers was a mechanic. Banjo Gardner lived up the hill, and he came into the store every night to get stuff for his lunch tomorrow. And Banjo really, like, guided him through the rebuilding of the engine of the pickup truck. And he got it done. But it wasn't because he was a mechanic and could do it. He just knew that he knew enough that he needed help. And he got good help to do it.
Yeah, there's a real way of thinking that folks like him have. I've seen it, and I've tapped into it a couple times. It's really all about patience and, you know, step by step.
Nobody had more patience, yeah.
I know than him. I know. We all know that, how patient he was, you know, and kind. And so let me ask you a question about the reaction. Do you remember Grandma and Pap's reaction to your getting polio? Do you have any memories of them?
No, I don't really. I don't remember any hysterical upsets or anything, any goings on about it. No, I don't.
Well, I wouldn't imagine those two would react that way to anything, but
no.
I mean, in my experience. But I just wondered if you remembered that. You know, he told me something one time. I don't know if I've ever told you this. I'm going to tell you this when you and I were speaking about this all before, but I thought I'd save it, talk to you about it now. But I remember some time, you know, when I was with him and speaking to him, the topic of your contracting polio came up. And he said to me, he says, you know, he said, I was always so worried that Rem would get polio. I thought about it. I was worried about it. I knew it was out there, and I was just worried he would get it. And for some reason, he focused on you, and he didn't mention Dick, but he said, I was worried Rem would get polio. And he said, and then he did. And he said, and I always worried or wondered if somehow I brought that on him because I thought about it and brought it to us, which is an interesting thing for him to say, you know, with that mind connection to other things. But that is something that he told me one time. Did you know that,
man,
about him?
No, I didn't know that, but I am so glad you told me that because that kind of stuff is so strong, but we don't know that. Nobody teaches us that.
It's true.
The things that you think about most, Napoleon Hill taught that. The things we think about most in our minds is what our reality becomes. And if my dad was thinking and worried a lot, I wonder why he thought I might get polio, but he didn't mention Dick.
I don't know. I was probably in my 20s when he said that to me, and I have thought about it since then. You know, maybe it's because you're the one that ended up getting polio, but he said, I was always worried, story, because it brought you back to your dad and the fact that he had actually said he just felt like he worried about it so much that it finally happened. Now, that's a big leap, you know, that your mental behavior could affect a virus that could then specifically infect an individual. That's an unusual, I mean, and I'm sure there's many people that think that's possible, okay. But it surprised me that your dad would say that only because he didn't strike me as somebody that would have a thought like that. You know what I mean? That would be that
there
metaphysical.
Must have been a reason. You know,
yeah, I know.
There must have been something in his makeup that I never saw. I don't know. But that it floored me because I think, doesn't Napoleon Hill say that thoughts are things?
Oh, yeah, they all do.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Whatever your predominant thoughts are, you bring into manifestation because, and it's not magic. I think there is a large connection between all of us that is much greater than all of us actually realize, since I think we're all really deeply interconnected.
That's what I said earlier. Like, I think there's so much more going on. There's just a lot that we don't know.
And I know I've never mentioned that story about Pap to you. It never seemed...
I never knew that.
A couple more questions about, you know, that whole experience with polio. So one of the things you mentioned to me before, I mean, how do you feel about the fact that when you were 7 years old, you got polio and it changed your life in the way that it did? You know, positive, negative, neutral?
I'll be honest with you. I never thought about when I was young and I had it and I couldn't run as fast as the other boys and that kind of stuff. I don't remember ever thinking much about that. Okay, let me answer this question. I never really thought anything about it. I did not ever think, why me? It didn't occur to me. I just had a leg that didn't work as well as my other leg. So I never thought about it. I mean, I did what I wanted to do. And I have that belief that we can do whatever we want to do in this life. Now, most people aren't going to become a brain surgeon. Okay, but most of the stuff that people want to do, we can do whatever we want, as long as it's, you know, within the law and all of that. If we want to build something, a business, we can do that, as long as we're willing to pay the price, as long as we're willing to do the work that it's going to take to do it, we can do it. But the thing I see today, even, most people don't think much about doing stuff. Because I think a lot of people think it's beyond them. They just can't do it. And I don't think that's how we're made. I think we're made to accomplish our goals and our dreams. That's what it's all about. But you have to understand that and then do what you have to do to gain the skills to be able to do whatever you want to do. But I never thought of anything about having had polio. I knew I couldn't run, but I could stop somebody from coming through the line where my position was, because I'd built myself up with weights and that's, and I loved to, in practice, I loved to hit. I mean, that was a bonus for me. I loved tackling practice and blocking practice and all of that stuff. I enjoyed it. But as I got further along, you know, and then I wound up getting my own practice, going to college, and so forth. I realized, I started to think about having had polio, and I realized that it was a blessing. I mean, that's how I feel about it. And I know it was a terrible thing, but I don't have any thoughts like that I know God didn't cause that to happen. Whatever it was, I got it. But I thought it was a blessing because it enabled me to become the person I became. And there's a lot about the person I became that I don't like. But that's okay. I did it. I will answer for it and all of that. And I wish I could do it over again and be better. But you can't. And so we're all kind of like that. I believe we get a do-over because I believe in reincarnation. And I don't know what your beliefs are and whatever they are, it's fine. But I believe that we get, and a lot of that comes from having belonged to Edgar Cayce's organization for a long time. And I belong to that because Marianne's been in it for about 30 years. But that's a whole different ball game. He had some kind of blessing or something. I don't know. But I don't know what's right and what isn't. But I try to do what I think is the best thing to do.
And you said you think it was a blessing that you got polio because it also helped you become the person that you became. And I mean, you mentioned
because
some things not so good, but other things very good, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I could put my mind to something and get it done. I think it was a blessing, because if my left good leg had been more like my right leg, I really like sports. Maybe I could have been a better runner. Maybe I could have been a much better athlete. And it's hard to say where that route, that path might have led me. I don't know. And I'm not unhappy with the path that I followed. And I think it helped me. It gave me the determination that I needed to get things done.
When I first started thinking about this, I really just started to, I just was looking online and doing searches for pandemic and quarantine. And what's interesting, and I really started doing that somewhere back in April, I would say, March, April, when this idea first came to me. When I was Googling, what was coming up, at least at the time, was, you know, mostly about polio, you know, and how long it took to, I mean, polio has been with us for thousands of years, but, you know, the big epidemic that started in the 20s in the United States and lasted until Salk actually came up with the vaccine. And I think that was in 1952, if I'm not wrong.
Is that when it was?
Yeah, yeah. 10 years after you was when they finally had the vaccine. And do you remember that happening? What did you think when you found out there was now a vaccine for the prevention of polio?
I thought it was a good thing. I mean, that's about all I could think. I wasn't upset that they didn't have it when I had it. I never made it a big part of my life.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, in fact, I probably ignored a lot of it. Because I could, you know, I could walk. I don't walk so good anymore, but I'm going to be, I'm headed toward 90 years old.
That's true, Dad. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, I started talking to you about this, again, about the time I started thinking about it and the polio. But, you know, in my whole life, you know, you and I have not really, I mean, certainly growing up or whatever, I mean, it just wasn't an issue. You know, you walked the way you walked, and I never really thought much about it at all. None of us did.
I know you didn't, and that was good because I didn't think about it.
I know.
I've told a joke a couple times during my life because that's who I am. But I don't know how I'm going to tell this out of context. I don't know what was going on or who it was with or anything. But a couple of times I've told a story to somebody that I was trying to kid around with or something. And it goes like something like this. I'm not sure how it went, but oh, I said, you know, I have two sons, and I said, there came a time that I had to set them down and talk with them because I was getting calls from the school, and some of the people downtown said, why are your sons walking so strange? And I said, well, they probably watch me walk, and they're walking like I'm walking. So something to do with how I limp, you know?
Well, it's funny you'd say that because, you know, it's been a long time, but when, you know, Diane and I have been married for 30 years, and she has accused me from time to time of, in a small way, mimicking the way that you walk.
Is that right?
Which I think is interesting. Yeah, she has accused me of that. Yeah.
That is interesting.
Which doesn't surprise me. I always just wanted to be like you, so it, yeah. I'll have to, I wonder if she remembers that, but that is something, you know, just in a small way. I mean, obviously not at all, but just a little bit that I might do that a little bit. So
there was no more discussion with my dad after this about his contracting and living with polio, but we did spend some time talking even more about my beloved grandfather, Rem Jackson Sr. Here are two of those stories that I'm pretty sure you'll enjoy. My grandfather was a very special man. And then after those stories, there's a little catching up with my dad's younger brother, my Uncle Dick.
He had a way about him that was special. I mean, he didn't believe in punishing anybody.
Well, you've told me a couple times about a couple of stories, since we're talking about my grandfather, your dad, who has the same name as, he's the first one to be Rembrandt Lorraine Jackson.
Yep.
Nice thing to share with him. I remember two stories that you've always told me about him and that describe him so well, and I think it's it's a worthy thing to talk about. So the first one, when you got in trouble when you were a kid. You want to tell that one first? Then we'll talk about when you got in trouble when you went to college. So what about when you were a kid?
Well, when I was a kid, we used to play one block from the house. There was a field. And we would play football there or whatever. Maybe, I don't know that you could play baseball there, but that's where we played football and other games. And one time we went out there and the grass had grown up pretty thick and it was making it a little bit difficult to get around through it. And it needed to be eliminated. So I was instrumental, I think, in getting a fire started. And it was pretty dry, and it got out of control, and it was burning toward Effie Steiner's house, which was a big old house, and in their family a long time, and they had money, but they were gone. Their daughter, Miss Effie, was living there, and I can still see her driving by our house on the way to town or somewhere. And she had an old Buick that had wooden spoke wheels. My God, that if that car was available today and in good shape, it would bring a small fortune. But it got away from us, and somebody called the fire company. And, oh, my God, the fire company came, and it looked like everybody in Chester Hill, and I'm sure that isn't true, but hundreds of people came. And my mother was among them. Dad was working. And she found out that I was involved in it, probably the ringleader. And she said, you should go home and wait in your bedroom till your dad comes home and talks to you. I said, okay. So I had no fear of my dad because he never laid a hand on me or my brothers in our lives. I mean, that wasn't part of his operation. So I went home, and I'm in the bedroom, probably reading or sleeping, and I heard him come in, and he come up the stairs, and he had stopped at the Fireman's Club down the street a couple blocks and probably had a beer, and somebody told him about the fire and me and so forth, and he said, his words, this is about verbatim, because this has never left my mind in all these years. I don't know how old I was then, probably between 5 and 10, somewhere there. And he said, I hear you set one today. And I said, yep, I did. He said, you're never going to do that again, are you? I said, nope, I'm not. And that was it. There was nothing else. There was no punishment. There was no yelling or screaming or anything intimidating. It was just a lot of love.
That's such a great story. And so, I mean, all of us grandkids knew him, and we all knew how special he was. He's a very special man. So was my grandma. So let's talk about the second time that you had to go and talk to your dad.
I had gone to Penn State Du Bois for a year. I was scheduled to go to main campus in architecture, but I really wanted to wrestle, and I thought I would have a better chance in Du Bois. And they had a good team that fed the main team on Penn State campus. So at the last minute, I was able to transfer to Du Bois. And the first thing I asked somebody when I got there was, where was the wrestling room? I wanted to check it out. And they said, oh, they discontinued wrestling this year. And I should have went home immediately, and we probably could have got a refund on the tuition because I had lost all interest in being there, and I got corrupted by a couple other guys, led me astray. We were all out doing things we shouldn't have been doing and not going to class. A lot of times we'd be coming home when everybody else was going to class and we were going to bed. And I went to a chemistry class one time, and teacher wrote on all four walls. And when he was done, he said, now that's your high school chemistry class, and we start from here. Well, he had lost me after the first board because I had Prof. Laybach, and I guess he was pretty brilliant, but he really wasn't much of a teacher. and I wasn't much of a student either. So when I got home, and that was true of all my classes, and I even had some nightmares in my life over that, because once in a while I'd have a dream about, oh my God, tomorrow's the final in that class, and I haven't been to class all semester. And it would wake me up. But
well, that's a very common, that's a common dream that people have. In fact, just this weekend, Diane and I both mentioned to Iris, our daughter, that we both had those dreams, like exactly like that. But in your case, it was almost true. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's very common.
No, it was true.
Yeah, right. It actually happened to you.
I had an engineering course, and I've never considered myself a great student. I could get my work done. And then later on, when I went to the University of Buffalo, about half the time I was working full time and going, I didn't mean to jump ahead like this, but anyways, I'll tell you that story some other time, because that is who I became. And anyways,
go ahead and tell it now. Tell it now.
Well, I'll finish this story and then I'll go into that. Anyways, I did not improve as a student in Du Bois, because I partied with two other guys, didn't go to class, and when I got home at the end of the semester, I walked out in the store to see my dad, and he said, "Oh, here's a number. Here's a letter that's for you," and it had been opened, and I don't know whether it was addressed to me or my parents, probably to them, but it was really directed to me, and it was a letter from Penn State telling me not to come back next semester because they had flunked me out of school. And verbatim again, this is my dad. You know, most parents might have been pretty upset with their child. They just spent, and I don't know, I have it in my head, it might have cost like way back then about $1,700. And where I got that, I don't remember, but that might have been right for tuition and room and board and everything. But my dad gave me that letter. He said, "This belongs to you." And I read it, and he said, "It looks like you screwed up." I said, "Yeah, I did." The very next words out of his head were, "Why don't you think about going to Lock Haven and becoming a coach? You always like sports." And very next words out of my head was, "Dad, I've wasted enough of your money. When I figure out what I want to do and what I want to be, I'll figure out how to get it done. Thank you." And that was it. There was never another word said about anything about that. And, of course, they were at my graduation at the University of Buffalo.
My Uncle Dick is 1 year and 10 months younger than my dad, so he would have been 5 years old at the time. And I asked him what he remembers about his brother contracting polio, and here are some of his memories.
"Do you remember the brace that they made for it that was made out of metal and kept breaking?"
"I don't remember too much about that brace, no."
"No.
No.
Dad said that Pap got he got the schematics or whatever for a box that you could build that, and you would put light bulbs in it, and then you put the leg in that box, and that would heat up the leg, and they thought that was therapeutic and helpful. And you remember that box, right?"
"Yeah, I remember, slightly remember about it, yes."
"You remember making it, helping Pap make it?"
"No, I don't think I helped make it, no."
"Oh, okay. No. Good.
I was too busy getting things for your dad."
"Really? What was that like?"
"Well, at the time, it was just what they felt I should do, I guess. You know."
"And what kind of things, like drink of water or whatever he needed?"
"Anything like that, or a toy if he wanted it, or a book, or whatever, you know,
yeah,
whatever he needed."
He says he remembers that you were just there the whole time. He remembers you were always there, and you were always taking care of him.
"Yeah, I can
and he
remember
says you
being
haven't...
there. Well, we slept in his bed, really. That's the only bed we had.
Wow.
We only had one bedroom and one bed, so I felt fortunate that I never got it.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, we were playing outside, and he didn't feel too well. So we'd come into the house, and he really never got much better in the last couple of days, so they took him to the doctor. That's when they found out it was polio.
Wow. How was the reaction? What was everybody's reaction?
I really don't remember, you know, what they said or what they did. But it was something that was going around at that time, so it was, you know, not good news.
No. Do you remember your parents' reaction to it at all?
No, I don't remember too much about that, no.
Yeah.
I know they were very serious about it.
Right. And you guys were living, that was this, were you already, you already had the store? I think you already had the store, right?
No, we didn't have the store.
Were you living in that, in Chester Hill then, or where were you living when he
got
it?
Living, yeah, we were living in the house on the corner there where the store was.
Oh, I see.
Let's see, that would be in 1941, 42?
He said he got it in 42, yeah.
Yeah. I remember a lot of trips to the hospital to see if they could help him. They didn't really know too much about what to do. And I think they made some mistakes, which they found out later. But, you know, at that time they didn't know. Probably had an effect on how his leg turned out.
Really? What kind of mistakes do you think they might have made?
They put his leg in a cast because it was turning. I don't know, it was deforming, I guess. And
mm-hmm.
They found out later that they shouldn't have done that. There was other ways to treat that.
Uncle Dick and I then turned our attention to my grandfather and the stories my dad shared with me about their father.
Yeah, it was funny. I mean, Dad's told me those stories before, and about, you know, Pap and, you know, when he got in trouble with the fire, he says, you know, his grandma was there with everybody else and said, well, you better go home and wait for your dad. And he goes, okay. So, and finally, Pap came home from work and came upstairs. He sits down with him and he says, I heard you lit one today. Dad says, yes, I did. And he said, I imagine you're not going to do that again, are you? Dad said, no. He said, okay, then. He said, that was it. That was it. That was the whole story.
Yeah.
Did you know that story?
I was there.
Oh, you were there when it happened? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was born to really run down and called the fire company.
Oh, were you really? Wow.
The other kids ran away and left Rem and I there. And then there was a neighbor called Pete Nudge. He came over, and he had a rake and a shovel. And he kept that fire away from that Effie Steiner's house so it didn't burn down. Fire company got there. It was just a little bit of the house that was burnt, you know, a little bit of the porch, and that was all. And he saved that house, really.
Yeah. Were you there when he talked to Dad? Did he talk to both of you, or were you there in the room?
Yeah, I was there. Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
I guess Rem's the one that lit the fire, but we did that every year. It was our baseball field, and it would grow up with weeds, and we would burn it off.
Uncle Dick's phone connection ended there. He was telling me that this particular year, it was very, very dry, and the fire just got out of control. My dad's polio has always been a fact of my life, and it was always just there from the beginning. It took the 2020 pandemic to remind me of it and to develop the idea to speak to him about it and to try to find some perspective for those of us living through our own very challenging times now. We don't know yet exactly how it will all turn out as of this recording in November of 2020. You know, it took 14 more years after my dad contracted polio for a vaccine to be found. And we do believe here it will be much sooner for us. The surprise for me, the wonderful gift for me, was to hear and record these stories about my grandfather. And as I say, my beloved grandfather, my brother and my cousins and all of the great-grandchildren who knew him remember him as fondly as his sons do. My grandfather once said to me, the wheels of justice grind slowly, but they grind exceedingly fine. And I've always remembered and returned to that wisdom over and over in my life, particularly when things just seem to be out of sorts or just not the way that they should be. I found it to be true. Pap Jackson, as we called my grandfather, was the most fun adult all of us ever knew. An outdoorsman who kept beagles as hunting dogs, he would take his grandkids out in that international Jeep Scout that was at some point only being held together by rust for outings in the woods and the trails of Pennsylvania, right in the center of the state, high in the Allegheny Mountains where we lived. No place on earth feels more like home to me than those mountains with their endless trees and beautiful babbling brooks. My grandfather rolled his own cigarettes until he stopped smoking. He would take us hunting and forget to load his own rifle. We often found him carrying his rifle with no ammunition clip in it. You could see right through it. My dad was indeed a talented athlete. That's another trait that did not pass down to me. And he did it with one leg untouched by polio and another exceptional, very special leg that allowed him to play sports, walk, and live his life, a heroic leg. Dad and I signed off and said goodbye. I hope you enjoyed meeting my father, my uncle, and our beloved grandfather.
Okay, and buddy. Hey, thanks a lot.
All right. See you later, Dad. And thanks for doing this.
Okay. Okay. And I love you. Take care.
I love you too. Bye-bye.
This is Rem Jackson. Smile when you wake up and then have a really, really great day. Your best day ever. Nothing is more important.